Hello and welcome back to Foolishly Faithful. This is episode 39. The date is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. The Mets have just wrapped up a California road trip where they went 3-3. There were some hearty wins, bookended by 3 days of pretty putrid offense, but ultimately they come home winners on the last day. They just wrapped up the finale in San Francisco. I'm here with David and Steve.
Ooh. Hello.
Guys, we're going to jump into these two series, which I'll just do a quick recap of. In LA, the Mets arrived for the Friday night game where they won 9-4. Then they then won the Saturday afternoon game 6-4. They took a beating in the Sunday afternoon game 0-10. Then they flew up to San Francisco for the Monday game. They lost 2-5. They lost again on Tuesday night 1-5, and then they just won the getaway day game 8-2. So let's jump into some reactions from this West Coast trip. Steve?
Yeah, first off, I mean, overall, I'm pretty happy with it. If you told me before we started this series, this trip, that we'd get 3-3 from the Dodgers and Giants, I'd be pretty happy with that. You know, taking the first two out of three to the Dodgers and then losing a series to the Giants kind of sucks, but I'm pretty happy. If you consider the losses that we did have, like Glasnow is going to be a Cy Young candidate, right? And is a very good pitcher. Logan Webb is also a very good pitcher that's a Cy Young candidate. So to get like our offense stymied by those two is really not like something that's like super upsetting. It's not, I don't think it's like a shows of things to come that our offense is just completely cooled down. We came back alive when we faced a pitcher that's a little more mediocre and a little more average. So I'm pretty happy about it overall. At least that's my take on the road trip. A couple of little more, like, I guess, deeper dive reactions is like the Mets are walking way too many people. I mean, like, way too many people. They've talked about it so much on the broadcast. I'm sure everybody's heard this already, but we are dead last in starters walks per nine innings for the year so far, by a lot. Our starters are walking 4.8 per nine innings, which is, if you consider that the starters are only going 4 or 5 innings, that's, you're talking about like 8 or 9 walks a game, right? Like that's a lot for a starter. And then to put that into perspective, Seattle right now has the lowest walks per nine from their starters at 1.8. So 3 walks per nine innings, or like 6 walks a game, more than that. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
we're also pretty close to last. And yeah.
Go ahead. We're close to
last. No, I was just gonna say that we're also dead last as a staff. We're slightly above Houston by like 0.01 in walks per nine as a whole staff, but the starters have been particularly bad.
Yeah. I think, yeah, the walks are just also so apparent when you watch the game as well. I think we got away with leaving runners on as a defense in LA. Like there's a bunch of instances of we left two guys on or we left the bases loaded and we got away with not giving up any runs. But I think that came to hurt us when we got to San Francisco and there was just more timely hitting from the opposing team. And it's good. It's nice to see pitchers get out of high leverage situations unscathed, you know, aside from their pitch count going up, but the walks are a problem. It's like free bases. You can't be giving out free bases. So it was nice to see Sevy yesterday go no walks. I feel like Manaea walked a few today. There were some late inning walks from the relievers as well. When I walked 4,
he walked 4 in 4.2 innings. You know, it's not nothing.
No, yeah, maybe they all blended together. I don't know. They're all blended together. The rest of them.
That's 8 walks per 9 innings. If you put that in perspective.
Yeah, that's not great. Like, yeah, not great. There was some untimely hitting. I feel like as well. There were some double plays we didn't turn. There's a few balls hit right out of the reach of Lindor. I feel like the past few games, although he had a stellar showing today in today's game. But yeah, the walks are a little concerning.
Is that like something that the coaching can fix? Like, is that just the players missing their spots, or is that like pitching coach trying to like paint the corners and they just can't make it? Like, how do we fix that?
They did talk about that on the broadcast, actually, that like it was kind of an organizational like philosophy of like, let's use the breaking pitches to paint the edges. And like, if the hitters are going to be disciplined, then those like edge painting curveballs that like look as like a strike and then dive out of the zone are going to be balls every time, and they're by design. But like, it's frustrating. I feel like we're watching pitchers get to like 0-2, 1-2, and then just like lose the batter or like get into a really deep count and rack up a pitch count. And I think that's like, that's one of the big reasons. That's another one of my big takeaways from this week, is that we are, the starters are not going deep and the relief pitchers are pitching a lot of innings. We're pitching about 4 innings per game, the bullpen, which is tremendously high. And our starters are going just under 5 innings a game. And it's like, I think it's 26 in the MLB. It's really scary. Long-term, our pitchers, relief pitchers have been great. We have the highest bullpen whip war in all of baseball, but it can only carry for so long if they're going to have to pitch 4 or 5 innings a game.
Yeah. They're playing well, and it's, I guess it's maybe they like being so regularly used, you know, as opposed to like Logan Webb threw eight innings against us yesterday, and then the Giants went with a full bullpen day today. So maybe there's something good in having a very active bullpen, but I'm not sure.
Interesting take.
I feel like it's not sustainable over the course of the season, though. We can't have starters going 4 every game. And it's like, what are we do have some people coming up, though. You know, we do have some starters that are coming back, like, and hopefully that would help. You know, what we got? Sanga, you know, I know he's on his way back, but Peterson, McGill, I know we don't like hearing those names anymore. Yeah, they'll be back. And we got some guys in the minors. What's his name? Christian Scott, is that the top prospect who's just been absolutely killing it in the minors? I mean, maybe we bring him up at some point. What does he have? Like,
Christian Scott had another really good showing. Yeah, this week he pitched another game. I don't remember his numbers exactly off the top of my head. Let me pull them up real quick. He pitched 6 1/3 innings with 8 strikeouts, 1 walk, 2 earned runs. So overall for the minor in AAA this year, he has 34 strikeouts in 20 innings, which is tremendous.
How many
obviously
walks
it's AAA,
in 20 innings?
Not 20, I'll tell you that.
It's like 4 something,
walks,
right? Yeah.
Four walks, yeah. it's pretty great. Obviously, AAA is not MLB, but
yeah,
it's encouraging.
I don't mind not having a lot of strikeouts. I think, you know, we come from days of Jacob DeGrom and Matt Harvey where, you know, we're just striking out people left and right. But to watch what Logan Webb did to the Mets last night, where I think he had like 15 or 16 groundouts and there's like 2 flyouts, like that's as efficient as you can ask for. And obviously he has fantastic stuff. He commands the zone and he leaves pitches at the bottom of the zone for strikes. He doesn't miss by much when they're balls. So, you know, that's his whole game plan. But we need to command the zone better.
It's funny because apparently he's been dominating for years and like I really don't know much about him. And it's like just we're on the East Coast, we never get to see him pitch. You know, he pitches late games. So apparently he's just like most people don't know on the East Coast have no idea like who this guy is or what he can do just because he pitches in San Francisco.
Yeah, I think he was like a Cy Young finalist last year. I mean, he's been around for 3 years, I want to say. 2, 3 years, 4 years. I think he's rookie of the year candidate when he first came up, but he's been good. He's their ace for sure.
You know who he actually reminds me of is Brandon Webb from the Diamondbacks, from when we were younger. Who's also a sinker ball pitcher that just like dominated for a long time. You didn't really hear about him because he was so like he didn't strike out a ton of people, but he was good for a long time.
Brandon
and just,
Webb. He might have won a Cy Young, Brandon Webb.
I think he did. He was, again, a similar kind of pitcher, but he didn't really have the notoriety, but he was good, and he didn't strike out a lot of people, but he was just kind of unassuming, really good pitcher because of his sinker ball. He did win a Cy Young in 2006.
Wow.
And he came in second in the Cy Young the next 2 years.
Wow. What happened to him? That's really 7-year career.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember how his career ended.
I don't know. One of those guys.
Maybe he was injured because he went from
leading. It's got to be an injury.
He led the league in wins in his age 29 season and then didn't pitch again. So something must have happened. I don't recall.
He had six straight years of 180 plus innings. So maybe that had something to do with it too.
That'll probably do it.
I don't know. People have a lot of years like that before the more recent times.
Yeah, I was just messing.
Cool. All right. I mean, what else? Let's see. David, do you have any reactions from this past week? Anything different from the walks and the hitting?
No, I agree with what Steve said is that, you know, we looked good. We showed fight, you know, like maybe Glasnow and Webb just had our number because they're just top five pitchers. They're just great aces and they were on their game. Maybe I'll chalk it up to that. Like, good for them. But other than that, I think the team showed fight and I don't know, they look good. It's definitely, they looked a little defeated at one point and like, you know, losing after Glasnow, like after the Dodgers game and then going into San Francisco, I was kind of doubting and I was thinking, is this a fluke? Have we just won the last few games and we're going to be back at 0-5? And no, we really just went for it and we came back today hard. Everyone has been, McNeil is coming around. He's been, 350 in the last 2 weeks? And he looks very good in the field. He might have made an error today, but overall, he looks very good in the field.
He's such. I know both of us had watched the interview of Mookie Betts and Brandon Nimmo on YouTube, where Mookie Betts interviews him, which is just a weird pairing to start. I had no idea they were cool like that off the field. But they talked about them coming up at the same time and everything. But they mentioned Jeff McNeil's nickname Squirrel and how he got it, and they said that it's because he just, and it was a nickname from college ball, is because he resembles a squirrel, and that's all I can think of. I mean, obviously I knew that, but it's all I can think of when you watch him play, because
really funny.
He had one play today where he just scrambles after the ball like a squirrel chasing a nut, and he threw the ball away to Pete at first. It was the ninth inning, so it didn't matter, but he plays like a squirrel out there.
You also catch that Nimmo says that McNeil hates that nickname, actually. But he's a team player, and he knows people call him, and he knows he looks like a squirrel, so he takes it, and he responds to the squirrel.
Yeah, I think Nimmo's reaction to when Betts asked him that question was, like, golden. He was, like, he kind of sheepishly, like, laughed and was like, because he looks like a squirrel.
He looks like a squirrel.
They also mentioned in that interview, sorry to, like, talk about that interview real quick, but like that the 2011 draft class was one of the best all time. So like it made me think, all right, let me see what that draft class was, because like I don't remember, you know, who gets drafted in MLB. It takes years for them to get to the majors. Like, what is it? So like I'm gonna just rattle off some names in the top 15 that were taken.
Top 15. Okay.
Gerrit Cole was number one.
Oh.
Trevor Bauer. Dylan Bundy had I think a couple of good years, never like nothing crazy. Anthony Rendon.
Rendon. He's taken four.
Francisco Lindor.
Oh.
Rendon was taken six. Yeah.
Six.
I'm skipping some people who never really made an impact, but Lindor, Baez, George Springer, Brandon Nimmo, Jose Fernandez.
Wow.
Sonny Gray, CJ Crone. It's a really good draft class.
Really good draft class.
Colton Wong.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That would have been, I would love to. And so Mookie was probably down at the bottom of the first round then, if he was in that.
That's right. Yeah. That was, he was not in the top 15.
He was fifth round. He was fifth round.
He was fifth round?
He's a fifth round pick?
Yeah. Pick number 172.
Oh, man.
Wow.
What a steal.
On the Wikipedia page, they just skipped to other notable selections. Just dropped a Mookie Betts.
That's pretty amazing.
He's picked three above J.D. Davis. Wow.
It just goes to show, right?
It just goes to show. Anything can happen. You don't know who you're picking, really.
Daniel Vogelback, second round, pick 68th. So way higher than Mookie Betts.
Wow. Wow.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story. Pretty, Mookie Betts, fifth round. He came up as a shortstop or a second baseman or something. They got moved to right field.
Yeah, shortstop.
To Boston. Pretty fascinating. I'd say watching Mookie play short, I forgot who made the comment. Maybe he was on the broadcast. I read it somewhere else. But someone was saying he's not a natural shortstop, even though he's a fantastic athlete. And obviously, he came up as a shortstop, but he's been playing outfield in the majors since. And he's played some second base.
he knows how to get to the ball, but he's not as intuitive, I'd say, as watching Lindor. Although clearly he's very good, but he made some errors too. He made some throwing errors over there at short when in the series they played the Mets. But it was a pleasure watching him play. He's so good.
I was seeing one thing, maybe just someone was being a contrarian, but he's getting older there. He's older than some of their young people. Maybe it pays to, he might not have as much range at shortstop where you need a lot of range. You need to run around a lot. Maybe they and Dodgers haven't necessarily been winning, or at least like winning to the extent that everyone thought. Maybe they should move Mookie back to second, where they do have some up and coming prospects or much younger players that could play short.
Yeah.
So
Lux. Yeah. Garen Lux. Garen Lux.
Yeah. That was the name. Yep.
Who was out? I think he was out with the ACL last year. He was out all year.
But they pushed him to second now. He's in. I think he's a natural shortstop, right?
Yeah, I think he might be. Yeah, I mean,
Betts was playing second all of last year, right? Like he's starting shortstop this year, kind of fresh, right?
He's played all year.
I think last year he played space most of the year.
Oh,
he didn't play shortstop last year.
Oh, because I think they had Miguel Rojas too playing short some days. But. Anyways, enough of the Dodgers. I think back to the Mets for a second.
Back to the Mets. All right.
Back to the Mets.
What are your takes for this week? What are your takes for this week, Eric?
I mean, I think the hitting was great. I mean, aside from the 3 days where we didn't hit at all, you know, due to the very tough pitchers and, you know, the first day in San Francisco where that kid, what's his name, Keaton Wynn threw a pretty good game. But I was really impressed with some of the hitting, especially in LA. I mean, teeing off against Yamamoto early on in the game felt really good. DJ Stewart ambushing the first pitch fastball, or it might have been a curveball he's waiting on, but he ambushed Yamamoto on the first pitch for a home run. The Dodgers tied up. Lindor has a late home run from the right side of the plate for his first lefty home run. Let's see, the next day, Marte with a 3-run home run to put the Mets up 3 in the sixth inning. Just good, timely hitting. Love to see it. I'm happy it feels like they have some momentum on that. I still want to see, like, a Nimmo home run. I want to see Nimmo really start teeing off. Marte's been hitting really well. I don't know. Just good vibes on the offense. They all seem to be enjoying each other when they hit, we'll say. The vibes seem good in the dugout, especially during the clutch hits.
Yeah, and I mean, Nimmo's been, like you said, struggling a little bit. But Lindor's also been heating it up a ton. In the last 10 games, he's hitting .333, 3 home runs, 10 RBIs. He's really been crushing it lately. So it's nice to see him. He's back over 200 now after today. So
yeah,
good to see.
He's passed the Mendoza line, which I'm surprised there hasn't been any play on words with our manager Carlos Mendoza and the Mendoza line, but.
We are the first.
We are the first. You heard it here first.
Trailblazers. Trailblazers.
The Mendoza line is batting 200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of that,
I don't know
the White
why
Sox,
or where that comes
as a
from,
team,
but
are under the Mendoza line.
Yikes.
Jeez. Are they playing worse
than the
Marlins?
It comes from some guy named Mendoza, by the way. That's all.
What's that?
Are they
it came from some
Marlins?
Old player named Mendoza. And yes, they are playing worse than the Marlins. The White Sox have 3 wins on the year.
Oh, yuck.
That's tough. Yep. That's tough.
Yuck. I mean,
the Marlins have 6, so.
I think the White Sox will even out a little bit. I mean, like last year, the A's started at a similar pace, and everyone was like, oh, are the A's going to be the possible worst team ever to play Major League Baseball? And I don't know. I think they'll be fine. They've still got professional ball players on
I'm
that team.
I'm calling it now. It'll be worse than the A's were last year. They're gunning for the 62 Mets. They look so bad.
What was the A's record last year?
Well, you had a really good note about the White Sox before we got on the
I did.
Recording.
So basically, it seems like the Twins can't hit breaking pitches, and people have been catching on, and that's what started last year's playoffs. They've got thrown way more breaking pitches than fastballs because they can't hit it. And that's what people have been doing this year. They've been seeing the lowest rate of fastballs, and it's been working because, you know, if you can't hit it, that's an easy scouting report. But apparently the White Sox just didn't get that memo, and they just threw them a slew of fastballs like normal. Like, they lost. Like, it's so simple. And other teams have been doing it, and they've been doing it this year. They've been doing it for since last year. Like, how do you have that level of incompetence?
That's pretty wild. Just like you have advanced scouts, right? You have people whose job it is to like go to like figure out the team you're playing next and like scout them, right? Like that's like a
Do
whole
you
job in
know?
baseball.
Maybe they don't.
Maybe they don't. Maybe
Maybe
they
they don't.
don't. Their scouts are actually location scouts and they're looking for stadium sites in Nashville. That's where their
I thought
scouts
that was the
are.
A's.
Or Vegas, or I don't know, Salt Lake City, wherever they want to put a team next.
Just quick, speaking of teams that are playing terribly, the Rockies, did you see, they've set a record now for 24 straight games to start the season where they have trailed at some point in the game. They have not had one game this year where they have not been trailing at some point.
I mean, but they see they must have some wins, which means they come from behind.
I mean, they have 6 wins, so like they're six and
Oh,
18. So it's you know.
they've got six come from behind wins. Look on the positive side. Come on.
That's a good
Don't know
point.
if you guys remember last year. I think the Rockies owner, people were complaining because you know the Rockies have been in this situation for a while now, and the owner was like, "Oh, it's fine. We've never got 100 losses. We'll just keep doing what we're doing." And then lo and behold, they got 100 losses last year, and they're right on schedule this year. So. He's really eating
Don't
his
tempt the
words.
baseball gods.
Yep.
I it's like some of these teams, and we were also talking about the Angels before as well. Like I forget some clip I was watching of someone asked some minor league baseball expert about who has the worst farm system in Major League Baseball. And this guy said, without a doubt, the Angels. Which is just a tragedy for that franchise that is like they have these terrible long-term contracts and they have no farm system and they let Shohei walk and gain nothing from it. And yeah, what a tragedy to be a fan of that franchise. Anyway, so on the A's, just last year's Oakland Athletics only won 50 games. They went 50-112, which is pretty terrible. Not as bad as the 41-6, the 40-120 Mets, but still pretty bad.
Mean,
If the White
what pace
Sox,
are the White Sox at right now?
who's got the numbers?
They're on a
They're on a
21
they're on a
win pace. Oh my God.
I should put on White Sox games just to see them. Honestly, when do they play? I have MLB TV. I
When do
should
we
watch
play
them.
them, more importantly?
Mets versus White Sox. Let's see.
Honestly, is sports betting legal in Chicago? 100 years, they got the whole maybe Black Sox scandal again.
Ooh,
End of
end of June.
no, end of August, I see. I see in the
No,
end of
we
August.
go to the White Sox in end of June. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the Rockies schedule.
Rockies, White Sox, that game must be terrible.
That's gonna
No,
be
we
rough.
see the White Sox at the end of August, right in time for us to get on a th win three easy games, right? Going into September, where we need some wins.
I'm sure by that time they're gonna be a very good team.
They really might be. Or all their prospects are gonna have made it up to the majors by then.
Last note on the White Sox. I've also heard from fans of the podcast say that the White Sox Stadium is the worst stadium they have ever been to. So,
Oh, it's
yeah.
bad. I've been there.
Oh,
It's
really? You've been there
oh, it's a
too?
dump. It's a total dump. I mean, to be fair, I only went to like the upper deck and I never really got, I went with my friend back in like 2018, 2019, and it was just a big kind of like concrete 19, like mid-century, like, well, it's older than Dodger Stadium. It's just a big concrete hunk of stadium, and it's sad. It's depressing. It's kind of built, funnily enough, like Angel Stadium, which I've also been to. Two teams that just kind of were like, yeah, this is the stadium. Come watch professional baseball. It's I think the only
It
thing.
sounds like you're kind of describing Shea Stadium.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. It's exactly it's very similar. Big concrete slab, yes. But they've had it for you know, they continue to have in 2024. All right. Do you want,
back
Steve?
To the Mets.
Back to the Mets. Back to the Mets.
Yeah. Bring us back to the Mets. Yeah.
Well, before we go on to break and talk about Mets roster news, let's talk about the news that we were all anticipating last week in regards to aesthetics and the City Connect jerseys. David, I know you've been chomping at the bit to share your opinion on these jerseys.
Yeah, I'm sorry to not chime in too much last week. You know, I know I didn't want to ruin you guys' hype, but I don't really care. Like, I'm sorry to everyone who's been waiting for this City Connect jersey to come out. And apparently they've sold out like right away, or at the very least the Senga jersey did. And like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the Senga
but
jersey.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's not that exciting to me. It's a little bit different. It's a cool jersey. It looks very cool, but I just don't see all the hype behind it. You know, I feel like it's like a huge to do and suspense and all these teasers coming out for it, but it's fine. It's just a nice jersey, you know?
You know, I'm sure your opinion actually resonates with a lot of people. And hopefully a lot of listeners are thinking like, yes, this guy, David, knows exactly what's important as it comes to being a Mets fan.
I mean, I was excited for the City Connect jersey. And to David's point, I mean, it ultimately, this is a cash grab by Nike and the Mets and all the other baseball teams that are doing City Connects, right? Like trying to get people to buy jerseys and new merch that they have, you know, without having to do too much, right? Fair enough. But I'll say that I like the City Connect jerseys overall. There's a lot of really good details in it. But like as a whole jersey, it kind of comes off as like, eh. The gray is too gray. Like I love the diamond and circles for the seven train and the pinstripes. I love the hat. I'm going to buy the hat probably. I like the New York City subway token on the patch. I like the subway, the train on the, like the piping of the sleeves. It's cool. But overall I think it's just a little strange.
I feel like they could have just called this an alternate, done this every Friday, once a month, Fridays or something. No one would have really questioned it. I just feel like you just hype this up as a City Connect jersey and then it just be like a slightly different jersey. Like, I don't really get the hype. I feel like just go full on Padres and just make it, what was it, like purple and neon green and yellow and just do something crazy out there. Like, just, it doesn't, it's a very nice jersey. It just, I just don't see all the hype behind it. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree a lot with Steve. I think the jersey is fine. It's a little too gray for me. I think it's, I would like to see some more pop. I mean, maybe, I guess like the letters and the numbers on the back, the letters and the names on the back do look nice. I think the white does pop out against the gray. We'll have to see what it looks like on this coming Saturday. When they wear them for the first time. Unfortunately, that game will be on Fox, which I hate to watch national broadcasts of Mets games. And they're probably not going to give the due diligence of, you know, that I think SNY would. But yeah, it's definitely a cash grab. It's nice to see new Mets official merch, I guess, new, like some sort of paraphernalia. I'm always on eBay looking for Mets stuff, like kind of old vintage stuff. I like the orange and I like the blue. The gray is a little odd. I don't know.
So the lettering is actually what bothers me most about it. I wish the new NYC was a different font. You mentioned that having that script from like the 80s, 70s back would be cool if they did some kind of subway script. They did so many subway nods on the jersey itself. If the actual font was something subway like related, like a mosaic or like the circles with some letters in it, would be great. I don't know why they didn't do that. Why they did this like spiky NYC that like doesn't scream Mets at all, doesn't seem subway at all. That's the part's the strangest thing to me.
Well, I mean, the font. You know what the font is? The font is the font from the away jerseys. The one that says New York. It's that font.
Is that the same font, really?
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
It's not apparent at first, but it is, because normally you only see it say New York. And on the backs of those of our away jerseys, we use the regular block letters, but it is that font, and they use it on the names on the back as well. So it definitely is.
I did not realize that at all.
It definitely is Mets heritage. But I will say that the front, the NYC, it looks a little bit off. There's something askew. There's like the letters are too far apart, or the curve is a little too like curvy. There's just something off about the letters that they just feel a little weird.
There's a lot of empty space they could have filled in. You're right. Now you mention it.
It's hard to put a finger on. It's like, I think with some minor adjustments, I would really fall in love with it, but I got to look at a picture again because it's I don't know. I do think
they did a great job with the hat.
But here's the thing. I think the hat, like the bridge, I wish it wrapped all the way around, but maybe if they did, it looks too much like a crown or I don't know. We'll have to see what it looks like on the players. I think that's the most important thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Does the
might go with the Saturday game.
Wear their City game, City Connect uniforms?
Say it again?
I think you only wear that at home.
Oh, so the Mets are going to wear these crazy uniforms or different uniforms, and the other team is just going to wear their normal?
Okay. Yeah. And here's the thing, though. The away team's jerseys are usually gray. So is it going to be a little weird to see? Like, because you have a gray jersey versus a darker gray jersey?
The away team's jerseys usually also say the city, too. So, like, NYC is very strange for a home team to wear. Like, usually it's the home team wears their name and the away team wears the city.
Yeah.
Also, they apparently for the game, they're going to, like, do a bunch of subway themes things in the stadium. The clubhouse is going to be decked out as, like, a subway station or something. They're going to do a lot of subway theme things for the actual game on Saturday at the stadium.
Kind of neat. I mean, cool. I mean, I love the subway. I wish I was home for that, but we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully Fox has a good presentation of it because I'm bummed not to see it on SNY.
They're going to interview the away team for like half an inning and we'll miss a couple home runs.
Yeah, it's like, so Paul Goldschmidt, you're really sticking it up on Eric's fantasy team. You have one home run and one extra base hit in 20 games. What's going on there? Well, you know, it's we're trying our best. You know, the Cardinals are not. Anyways, Nolan Arenado, where have you been? No, I'm not here. All right. That'll wrap up our first half. We're going to take a little break and we're going to jump into some of the other Mets news that happened this past week. Talking about some roster moves and injuries and stuff like that. And there'll be trivia, of course. We'll be right back. Hello, and we are back from break. To kick us off for this second half, we have got trivia.
Woo woo.
Trivia. All right.
Eric, you got the trivia this week, right?
I do have it this week. All right. Because we are going to be playing the St. Louis Cardinals this coming weekend, the Mets and the Cardinals have a long history. Obviously, there's been a lot of players that have played for both the Mets and the Cardinals, some notable ones including Keith Hernandez, Carlos Beltran, Ruben Tejada. But the question for this week is, and I chose the window of just the past 2 years. In the past 2 years, there have been three Mets who have played for the Cardinals at some point during their careers. Who are they?
Question, like currently on the Mets roster?
In the past 2 years. They've been Mets in the past 2 years.
So 2023, three players. 2024, they were a Met.
Yes, in 2023 or 2024, they've been a Met. And they have been a Cardinal at one point in their careers. Three players.
Okay.
All righty.
That's interesting. Position players, pitchers? What am I looking at?
You're looking at two position players and one pitcher.
Okay. Okay.
I have a pitcher, but I think that he probably misses the time frame.
I think there's an easy one, a medium one, and a hard one of these three.
I have no one in my head right now. Hopefully someone will come to me as we're talking about.
Okay.
That's rosters.
All right. Well, as you guys mull it over, we're going to jump into some news, some Mets news. Not great news. Some hopeful news, but not great news. The first being the bad news is that Francisco Alvarez left. Was it Friday's game or Saturday's Friday's game at night? He's trying to stretch. He might stretch into a double, a hit down the line into a double. He fell on his thumb, tore his ligament. And he will need surgery. He got surgery and he's out for 8 weeks. Originally the time frame that was expected to be 6 to 8 weeks, but the broadcast mentioned That after surgery, the doctor said that it would probably be more like an 8-week timeline. So, yeah, I mean, these are always generous timelines, but you know, Alvarez seems like a tough kid. He might get back earlier, but nonetheless, it's the tough loss for the time being.
Yeah, that one hurts. That one really hurts. Obviously, he started off the year really well. He's struggling a tiny bit over the last week or two, but still, like, he's a 22-year-old player. You like love his enthusiasm. You love like what he can bring, that power bat, that like such a big plus side and really good pitch framer. Much better than I feel like Devias has been so far behind the plate. But yeah, it's tough. Obviously, it was a hustle play, right? He got hurt because he was trying hard, which is just like it's part of the game sometimes. Unlucky. Keith Hernandez keeps saying it, you know, if that catcher makes the proper play, doesn't make an error, then he's never injured. He makes a right turn into the dugout instead of left turn to second base. Yeah, tough to see. A little silver lining, Nito, who was coming in as a replacement, threw out our first base runner of the year in his first game starting as a catcher.
Gone, Nito
King. came in for one day and finally threw somebody out. So that's great. Ray, what do you got?
I'm upset that, you know, Alvarez got hurt, but at the same time, I know when the first couple of episodes of the year, we were talking about being more aggressive in the base paths. So, you know, it's like a catch 22 in a sense where, you know, like he was hustling a little bit more, but at what cost? And I think it was his left hand that went down because like he was like rounding first and like, you know, he put his hand down to go into it. So
yeah, it was his left hand.
So I do worry a little bit going forward with that because like that would I assume that's the glove that that's the hand that he uses to, like you said, frame the pitches and do everything behind the scenes that he's so good at. It's like even the pitchers have said, like, you know, there's definitely a difference between like when he's behind the dish versus like Alvarez or Nito. You know, he's got like some of that intuitive, you know, where do you put the glove to get the call. And I hope it's as simple as like, you know, quick 8 weeks, you know, a little bit of rehab and it comes back. It's at full throttle. But yeah, like it was a big hit.
Yeah, I mean that left hand takes a beating, right? Like he's getting 95 in the glove in that left hand, right in his left thumb, 100 times a game, 150 times a game. So that left hand definitely takes a beating. One thing they might do because of his like bat upside as a catcher, like if he comes back in 8 weeks, DH him for 2 weeks, let him keep resting that thumb for a couple more weeks.
I like that.
Until you at least have his bat back in the lineup while he's getting ready to catch every day again.
No, I definitely like that. That's like almost like a la Otani. It's like, all right, like he can't pitch, but exactly. Like, you know, he could still hit the ball.
It's like it would be so great if JD Martinez could catch. That would work out so freaking well. But unfortunately, you know, just the timing of things, that's not going to work out. And we'll have to live with this hole in the nine spot in the lineup with our catcher of the day, whether it be Narvaez or Nito. Ray, you were mentioning how he likes to, like, yeah, we wanted to see our players hustling more. But, like, Alvarez, I when I watch him run, it's, like, the same when I watch Alonso run, where it's, like, these big guys, and they're running so hard. They're putting everything they can into rounding the bases. But I'm just thinking, like, please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt.
And it's just clunky.
They're just, I mean, Alvarez kind of runs really clunky. And he's quick. He wants to get down there. But I always worry he's going to hurt himself. I think in the past week before he slid into second, I don't know if it was on a double or a stolen base, and his thumb, that same thumb, got jammed up again. And then I think the game after, he might have got hit by a pitch or a backswing, and it was the same thumb. So maybe that, you know, him falling on it was the one that finally put it over the edge. But maybe it's good for him to rest that hand regardless. Maybe it'll, who knows? Maybe it was bugging him more than he let on.
Yeah, I think it was the day before that he had like hurt his finger and on sliding into second base. But you brought up a point about him getting hit with a backswing. Alvarez gets hit by the backswing more than I've ever seen a catcher get hit by the backswing. I don't know if you guys have noticed this as well. Maybe it's something that's just in my head. I don't know. I don't have any numbers on it, but I feel like watching the games, like every other game, he's getting hit by the backswing, and like that hurts. Like these people are not swinging lightly, and the bat is a piece of wood, right? Like he gets knocked in the helmet, he gets knocked in the hand. That's could break something pretty easily. So I don't know if he sets up really close to the plate. I don't know what the deal is, but I feel like he's getting hit all the time back there.
I haven't noticed that with Alvarez, but I saw it with Narvaez, I think last game or the game before that. And I kind of felt like the batter was like, you know, squaring up way towards the bat of the back of the box. Like, I don't know if that's a trend, like you're saying, like if it's more common around the league, but I could definitely see it.
Yeah, I think maybe in the last 10 years, that's become really common to be in the back of the box with how much the pitchers have thrown a lot harder. They get that extra split second to get some reaction time.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of hitters being good hitters. Like I think they're saying Ohtani might lead the league in catcher's interference or something, or he gets catcher's interference a lot because he's so good at waiting for the ball to go deep in the zone to drive the other way. So I think that could be an aspect of it. And I also wonder, this is total like mad scientist, but I wonder if you're allowed to, you could frame better if you catch it earlier, because then, right, if you're catching the ball earlier, then you can pull it up and it gets closer to the umpire by the time you leave the glove, as opposed to if you were catching it way back, the umpire has a better look at it. And it's harder to move, and it, like your moves are more apparent. So if you start earlier, you can kind of pull it and get it closer to the umpire by the time it ends. I have no data to back that up, only just a theory from watching baseball and knowing baseball.
I could definitely see that, coupled with like the batters like playing back and waiting to like take their swings. So it's like the umpire is probably waiting for like a combination of those two factors, like where the ball crosses and where the batter makes his motion. So it's a lot later than traditional.
Yeah. But all that to say, I mean, I think Nito being up, I think I said at some point earlier in the year, if we saw Nito on this roster, that means something went wrong. Something did go wrong. But
that's exactly what you said.
But, you know, it's fine to see him, honestly. I actually don't hate it as much as I did, as I thought I would. He's a well-liked guy. He knows the players. He's been met for a long time. And he can throw runners out from his knees, so that's certainly a plus. I know they were talking about bringing Kevin Parada, who was hitting like 100, like 150 in Double A or something. So I don't think that's the move.
When I saw Nito come up, I was actually thinking exactly like, oh, I remember Eric saying like something had gone horribly wrong if we see Nito this year. And there he is.
There he is. But let's see, I mean, 8 weeks, that puts us to about the end of June. I would say, to be generous, after the All-Star break, maybe we'll see him. Right. Cause July,
you think that late?
I mean, 8 weeks, 8 weeks from the surgery, what puts us, to June 24th, which is 2 months. All-Star break is mid July. Maybe they'll wait it out, but we'll see.
That might line up when Senga's coming back. So if anything, they could do rehab together and get really fresh for.
That could be fun.
Hopefully Senga's back well before that. He's supposed to be back late May. So if Senga's not back till the end of June, July, that'd be a tough pill to swallow.
I want him coming back when he's ready. I don't want him rush back.
Fair. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. That's a good point.
All right. The next player, we got some injury news that sent to the IL, was Brooks Raley, our lefty specialist in the bullpen. He went to the IL with left elbow soreness, I think the diagnosis was, or left.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is, for any pitcher, anything involving the elbow and soreness, it's like, shut him down. I want nothing to do with it. But maybe that's just the PTSD from Jacob DeGrom.
Every Mets.
I think in this case, it's PTSD.
Yeah, they said he doesn't need surgery. There's no structural damage, so that's good.
He had a similar injury last year, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, he's been good. I mean, I think he By the time he got sent to the IL, he also had no earned runs. I think he threw seven innings
That's
or
right.
six innings, and he was another
Seven innings, no earned runs. And more than just a lefty specialist. He only faced five lefties so far this year, compared to 20 righties.
Interesting.
So
He's just
he's
a good
just
pitcher.
A good pitcher. He's just a good
cool.
pitcher who's also lefty.
Well, one of the things that like we're fortunate for this year, is like we're losing a player like that. We still have Reed Garrett, who's been killing it. So normally, like, we have like one or two bullpen guys, and when they go down, it's like, all right, like, you know, throw your hands up. What are we gonna do from here? But we still have pieces. Was Reed's been doing very well.
Reed Garrett has been a revelation, and I was like, I could actually barely remember him, but he was on the team last year as well. He pitched. He was in nine games last year, to the tune of a 5.82 ERA, 17 innings, 11 earned runs, 15 hits, three home runs, six walks. So he was pretty bad, and his lifetime stats are also not very good. He has a lifetime ERA of 5.73 in 37 games. He's been in the league since 2019, but he's just been out of nowhere, lights out. I mean, his slider is amazing, or his sweeper is, he gets a good rotation on that.
Today
he's
he
been
got
amazing.
A little banged up, but he's still, I think he walked away with the win.
Yeah, he's 4-0 on the year this year. He gave up the one home run.
He's got a save.
He has four wins and a save. He finally gave up his first run, a solo shot. I think in his second inning of work, he pitched two innings today, or maybe an inning and two thirds of work.
I think he pitched one inning.
I think it might have been more. He came in, he threw the one pitch to get out of the fifth. It was the two full innings. Yeah. So
yeah, you're
that's
right.
That's been his MO this year, though. Like, April 4th, he had three innings. April 8th, he had two and a half innings. You know, he's been like the dog, you know, picking up one inning, two innings here or there. He's doing what like we need the starters to do, but we can't get them to go the distance.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we touched on it earlier, but like our bullpen's been phenomenal this year, and it's like up and down, right? Like Ray just said, we're not waiting on like one or two guys in this year. Like Diaz went down last year and our bullpen went to shambles. Like we have Diaz, we have Ottavino, we have Drew Smith. Those are our top three people, right? Like we haven't even talked about Brooks Riley or Garrett, even though they've been phenomenal. They're a fourth, fifth, maybe sixth option in the bullpen right now, which like is the reason the Mets are doing so well right now. They're really picking up the starters.
And we have so much of the hype about like, oh, Edwin Diaz coming back, that there's times that like we're, you know, we're pulling the trigger early, like put Diaz in, like he'll throw the eighth and the ninth. It's like, no, we don't need him to do that. Like we have players that could actually, you know, hold us for those innings. Save that arm. Like, let's not blow it out so early. And it's just like, in terms of getting the offense to produce a little bit more. And they've been doing a better job at that compared to the first week or 2 weeks. But like, we need to step that up so that our bullpen can just, you know, thrive.
And maybe there's some aspect of like there's less pressure. I don't know. Like, the fact that Diaz is there to really put out any fires because he's like the alpha dog in the bullpen. I don't know if they see him that way. Yeah. Obviously, he's the closer by name, but he's so talented that maybe it relieves the pressure of a reliever going in saying, well, the game can't get too out of hand, because if it really does, then there'll be someone in here to back me up. So I'm just going to go and attack these guys.
I mean, like Ray kind of alluded to this with his last comment, but like he did that against the Dodgers, right? Like, there was a fire. It was the eighth inning. Betts already got on base, but then Otani and Freeman are coming up. Eighth inning, doesn't matter. Send out Diaz. Like, I thought that was the right move. I was also thought it was a great move to not send him out through the ninth. It's still early in the season. He pitched like 19 or 20 pitches because he walked. He wound up walking Otani and Freeman, although he got out of the situation. It's taking the pressure off of everybody.
Yeah. Especially if you see Diaz go out there in the eighth and just and set people down and get through the inning, it kind of maybe gives you some confidence to be like, oh, I can do that too. I'm just going to win us the game. He just went out there and took care of the hard stuff. I can strike these guys out, no problem.
And I'm sorry to take away from what you just said, but with a 1-2-3 of Freeman, Otani, and Betts, like, that is probably one of the strongest 1-2-3s in MLB history. So to send a closer, send any pitcher out there against that, it's monumentous. Like, there's four or five MVPs between the three of them easily. Like, you don't see that, like, sequence of batters very often. And the fact that, like, they could, you know, keep the composure.
Yeah, they did a great job. As for the other people in the bullpen, I mean, there's Jorge Lopez, and then we have what seems to be our rotating slot of DFA relievers.
Tonkin and Jay and whoever else is the...
Yeah, Michael Tonkin got DFA'd. Tonkin got DFA'd again. I think there was Josh... I don't know what his name is. Josh Victor, Josh something. There's some pitcher who got called up, who is kind of our, you know, in between minor league, major league guy. And that's the final spot.
Harwig.
Grant Harwig is another one, but who's Josh? Josh Walker.
Walker.
The guys who just fill in the rest of the bullpen. I'm going to get some innings. But yeah, I mean, more recently, I mean, the name that got called up was Sean Reed Foley, which at this point feels like a name from the past. I mean, he's been hurt so many times in the past few years.
That's true. Yeah.
But he had some fantastic times for us in the past few years. I feel like he was really like a stud at the bullpen. He had some long relief appearances.
I don't remember him being that great.
Really?
I don't know if he pitched a lot of innings for us over the last few years, but yeah, I feel like he's been injured for like since like 2020. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Wasn't he one of those like rookies that like were supposed to like throw heat, like almost like a rocker, but like just never, every time he got a chance, like he didn't like come through.
So look up his baseball reference. He came up in 18 with the Blue Jays, came to the Mets in 21, pitched 20 innings for us to a 5.2 ERA. 22, he pitched 10 innings for us to a 5.4 ERA. And last year, he pitched 7 innings for us to a 3.5 ERA. So not very small sample size.
Why does it feel like that much? I feel like he pitched so many more innings than just 20 innings in 2021.
I agree. I feel like 20 seems low, but it's, you know, I don't, that's what it
when,
is.
When he's gone this year, has he done the, cause I remember he used to have the stance on the mound. It was kind of Kimbrel where he would like really squat and he'd get really low and before he'd get set. Maybe he doesn't do that anymore.
That's what I'm calling like another hyphenating last name. Was it Crow Armstrong?
Is, yeah.
Sean,
yeah. Reed Foley is hyphenated.
Crow. Yeah, it is. All right. Well, last roster news is JD Martinez is likely to finally join the team on Friday versus the Cardinals.
About time. Can't wait to see him.
Yeah, that's gonna be nice. I think it's.
I'm just trying to get Jed Lowrie vibes.
I know. I'm glad to see him.
I hope he's better than Jed Lowrie.
I hope he actually plays. You know, as opposed to Jed Lowrie, who played like 3 games.
28 games for us over the course of a year.
Oh no, I think it was even
fewer. Was it that many?
No, I think it had to have been like 9 or 8 or something.
In the course of 2 years, I think.
Yeah, I think he had no hits in all of those games.
Yeah, it was 9 games, 8 plate appearances in 2 years.
Oof. And then we released him and he had like kind of like a semi small breakout. Like
he went back to Oakland and I think he started hitting.
Yeah, he went back to Oakland.
but JD, I mean, we'll see. I think the corresponding move will probably be Zach Short, who is our extra infielder, who hasn't played much at all. Wendell has been kind of getting those backup opportunities on the infield. So JD feels like the right move. DJ has to stay, I think, based on how he's been hitting. But I'm just curious when they're going to play him. It kind of, he kind of becomes a permanent DH, you know, and you can't, you really have to make the call to, you know, not sit people for rest or something. And because JD can't really play the field. So we'll see.
But DJ's been hitting.
All right. DJ's been hitting. Marte was DH today and he had a bunch of hits. Or that was last night when he was playing the field. Never mind. But yeah, sometimes the DH is good for the half day rest.
JD can play first, right?
I don't know. I think he used to play outfield, but I'm not sure.
Oh.
He's going to play first over Alonso.
Stewart can play some outfield, right?
Stewart can play some outfield.
Not over Alonso, but if Alonso needs a day off here and there, right? Like, I know Alonso tends to play 160 games a year, but, you know, so having a day off here and there.
It's a career year for him also. Like, he's not going to try to take any days off.
I know. He wants to probably get started right when he arrives. He probably wants to just get playing every day. So we'll see. I hope he plays well. That's all I got to say. All right. Well, we will see how he does next week when we talk. But before we wrap, we have the trivia question. Do you guys need this again?
Ooh. Yeah, let's hear it again. Let's get it.
All right. In the past 2 years, there have been three Mets who have played for the Cardinals at some point during their careers. Who are they?
Can I take a guess at the
two position players?
Two are position players, one is a pitcher.
Is Steven Matz the position, the pitcher?
Oh, that's an I forgot he was a player who played for both the Mets and the Cardinals. He's still currently on the Cardinals, but he has not been on the Mets in the past 2 years.
I thought that he missed like the
good guess though.
Good guess, very good guess.
That's my one.
I think I know the slam dunk player. He played for us last year. I think we traded him to Arizona. Is Tommy Pham?
Tommy Pham is the player, but he is not the slam dunk. I had him at medium.
Okay.
The slam dunk player is currently on the Mets. I'll say that.
Okay, I had a guess as to the pitcher.
The pitcher's the hardest one. I think.
Pitcher's the hardest one?
Yeah, because the pitcher's stint, he got called up with St. Louis. He was there for
Wendell wasn't on the Cardinals. Wendell was on the Angels.
Ooh, not Wendell.
Ooh, okay.
But this pitcher, he started with the Cardinals and I think he played like six games. He was in five games for the Cardinals to start in 2010.
Hauser?
I think Hauser played for the Central. He played for the Brewers, I think, though.
Probably not a starting pitcher, probably bullpen.
It is a bullpen.
I was thinking
guy.
Somebody like. Wait, did Quintana play for the Cardinals?
Oh shit. I think you actually I might have that wrong. I thought he did because he got traded there at the end of last year. Wow. Okay. I stand corrected. That make it four. If there's not more than I'm missing. I feel like every time I give a trivia question, I always fuck it up. Jose Quintana is correct.
Quintana. Okay. Okay.
Quintana right, did we play got there. No, Quintana did we play. We talk it out.
The final pitcher was Adam Ottavino, who started his career with the St. Louis Cardinals in 2010.
He played for a lot of teams, right?
He's pitched for a bunch of teams. He was in Colorado for 7 years, then to the Yankees for 2 years, then to the Red Sox, and now he's been on the Mets. But wow, I completely missed Quintana. Sorry about that.
Who's the obscure slam dunk player?
Guys. Who's center fielder?
Give us. Oh, okay.
Harrison Bader. I think is like right. as quintessential of a Cardinal as I can remember. That's where he spent most of his career.
That's fair.
There might be more. I might be missing some.
Did Eduardo Escobar play for the Cardinals? I feel like he could have been a Cardinal.
Let's see. You know, I have some beef with Baseball Reference. They're giving me some false data. Eduardo Escobar did not play for the Cardinals. He's played for the White Sox, the Angels, the Brewers, the Mets, the Diamondbacks, and the Twins. Yeah, maybe.
Are you sure? Oh yeah, he did. Quintana was traded to the Cardinals in 2022. I almost missed that on the bit. I just went to his baseball reference page, and I thought he was not Seattle, St. Louis.
Well, I don't know why.
Good trivia though. Good trivia.
Oh, pitching.
That was some tough ones.
Another one. There's actually been other players in the past 2 years. Now that I've rearranged. Uh-oh. Now that I've looked again at my baseball reference page, it was just showing hitters, but then there was also.
Okay,
oh, because I guess Adam Ottavino had batting stats because it was sorting my batting stats and pitching stats.
Okay.
Adam Ottavino.
Batters.
The other pitchers were, I don't think either of us would have gotten them. Dominic Leone and TJ McFarland. Dominic Leone, I remember from last year. TJ McFarland, I have.
They pitched a little bit last year, both in the bullpen. I think they were like in that rotating DFA position options up and down. I would never have guessed them though.
All right. That will wrap it up with that question. Thanks, Baseball Reference. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, fan mail, hate mail, you can email us at foolishlyfaithfulmetspod@gmail.com or on Instagram at foolishly_faithful. On behalf of Ray and Steve, this is Eric. Thanks for listening, and LFGM.
It's cool.